money from the oligarch, from the political elite, and so they don't necessarily make that distinction. And so, you know, my point of view is that, you know, if this is a revolution, we're waiting for it to actually come to fruition. But in the meantime, what's happening are a lot of people that are being displaced and that are seeing that their biggest foe are these armed groups that a lot of them mix together as one, because what they see, you know, what they feel are bullets, what they hear are bullets, and what they see is they're living in a space where there's a lot of violence and a lot of pain. And so then if there's a revolution, there needs to be a particular kind of ideology that takes over the entire country. And that remains to be seen.
We're going to have to leave it there, but of course, we'll continue to cover this issue. Jemima Pierre, Haitian-American scholar, professor at the Social Justice Institute at the University of British Columbia in Canada, research associate also at the University of Johannesburg in South Africa. Her recent article for NACLA is headlined Haiti as Empire's Laboratory. And Kim Ives, editor of the English language section of the weekly Haiti Liberté. Next up, we go to Jan Egeland in Oslo, Norway, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, as Israel faces global condemnation over the killing of 7 aid workers from the World Central Kitchen in Gaza. Some humanitarian groups are suspending operations in Gaza, even as it descends into famine. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Israel's facing global condemnation over the killing of 7 aid workers from World Central Kitchen who'd brought food into Gaza by ship to feed starving Palestinians. The aid workers were killed when an Israeli drone fired 3 missiles at the group's clearly marked convoy, even though the charity had coordinated the convoy's route with the Israeli military. At the United Nations, Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the Israeli attack.
The devastating Israeli airstrikes that killed World Central Kitchen personnel yesterday bring the number of aid workers killed in this conflict to 196, including more than 175 members of our own UN staff. This is unconscionable, but it is an inevitable result of the way the war is being conducted.
The killed aid workers included 3 British nationals, an Australian, a Polish national, an American-Canadian dual citizen, and a Palestinian. In a video address, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu confirmed Israel attacked the convoy.
Unfortunately, in the last day, there was a tragic case of our forces unintentionally hitting innocent people in the Gaza Strip. This happens in wartime. We are thoroughly looking into it, are in contact with the foreign governments of those killed, and will do everything to ensure it does not happen again.
This happens in wartime. Meanwhile, President Biden said he was, quote, outraged and heartbroken over the deaths. But at a White House press briefing, National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby refused to say if Israel had broken international law.
Is firing a missile at people delivering food and killing them not a violation of international humanitarian law?
Well, Israelis have already admitted that this was a mistake that they made. They're doing an investigation. They'll get to the bottom of this. Let's not get ahead of that. The State Department has a process in place. And to date, as you and I are speaking, they have not found any incidents where the Israelis have violated international humanitarian law.
On Tuesday, Chef Jose Andres' World Central Kitchen and at least two other groups said they would pause operations in Gaza after the attack. Meanwhile, HuffPost reports a group of U.S. officials at USAID have privately warned the Biden administration the spread of hunger and malnutrition in Gaza is unprecedented in modern history and that parts of Gaza are already experiencing famine. For more, we go to Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, speaking to us from Oslo, Norway. Jan, thanks for joining us again. Can you start off by responding to the Israeli airstrike on the three-car convoy that killed seven international aid workers?
It was horrific. And remember, this was targeted. It was repeated attacks. First one car, then the next car, then the third car, and a couple of the cars were targeted several times. It's not likely that the Israelis wanted to kill the colleagues from World Central Kitchen. World Central Kitchen had worked closely with the Israeli forces to get out support to Palestinians in northern Gaza. But they surely hit cars that they did not want know what was inside. And that's the story of this war. So when the State Department say we cannot see any violations of humanitarian law, they haven't read the humanitarian law, because there has to be precaution. There has to be distinction between military and civilians, and there has to be proportionality. And after thousands of dead children, thousands of dead women, all completely innocent of the 7th of October, hundreds of doctors, hundreds of nurses, hundreds of teachers, and 200 humanitarian workers before the international workers were killed, it's very clear that this has been a disproportionate response to what happened, the horrors of the 7th of October, in violation of international law, every day, basically since mid-October.
Jan Egeland, in that vein, I'd like to ask you, excuse me, about a recent report in The Observer over the weekend in England, that a member of parliament, Alicia Kearns, a Conservative Party member and the chair of the House of Commons Select Committee, was at a fundraiser, and there was a leaked tape of her remarks there. And she said in that leaked tape that the British Foreign Office has received official legal advice that Israel has broken international humanitarian law, but that the government has not announced it and has kept it quiet. I'm wondering, especially in view of the fact that three British nationals were killed in this latest attack, your response to the fact that the British government is hiding the fact that its own lawyers have said Israel is violating international law.
Well, I just met Alicia Kearns in London, and she's a very fine politician. She went to Rafah. She saw all of the trucks that were lining up, not able to go into Gaza. She wrote letters about that to both the UK government, and she approached the Israelis. I mean, she is really engaged on this, as so many others have become, as they see the injustice in what's happening to the population of Gaza. Whether the UK government is concealing advice on this, I cannot say. But the facts speaks for themselves. If you have a conflict where there is a world record in killing protected categories of personnel, then the law is broken, you know, to pieces. There's no other way to see it.
I I wanted to go to a tweet where you said the U.S., the U.N., the EU, and the rest of the world agree that we're at the brink of famine in northern Gaza. Still, only 159 trucks were allowed into Gaza yesterday, and Israel blocks all food convoys from UNRWA to reach North Gaza. There must be accountability for this. Then you go on in another tweet to say the horrific targeted repeated attack that killed seven WCK aid workers follow nearly 200 Palestinian humanitarians killed by Israel's military campaign. Now, finally, Western governments providing arms to the killing say enough. Immediate ceasefire ending the killing of civilians, protection scheme that guarantees safety for humanitarian work, opening of land crossings for massive aid to the north, ending chaotic air and sea delivery, no military invasion of the world's largest refugee camp, Rafah. You tweeted that in the United States, President Biden talked about being heartbroken, but as the New York Times reports, Biden administration is pressing Congress on $18 billion sale of F-15 jets to Israel. This follows the deal made with F-35 jets and many 2,000-pound bombs and 500-pound bombs. Can you respond to the U.S. and other countries supplying these weapons at this point to Israel?
Well, my own country, Norway, a NATO country, has refrained from sending arms to Israel for quite some time. So has many other countries. It is really mind-boggling if the U.S. now sends these large bombs that are by nature indiscriminate to a place with so many thousands of dead children. Are they not thinking of the consequences for their moral authority in the rest of the world? What does this mean for the West's arguments in Ukraine? If it's wrong, as it is, for Russia to occupy Ukrainian territory, kill Ukrainian civilians, target Ukrainian infrastructure, how could it possibly be correct when the Israelis do the same to the Palestinians and with U.S. arms?
And Jan Edlin, I'd like to ask you, your organization, like others that provide assistance in Gaza, have to coordinate your activities, obviously, with the Israeli military. What does this latest attack mean for those future efforts organizations that coordinate closely with the military so that they are not attacked end up being still attacked?
Well, we have coordinated with Israel now for many years. I was myself in Gaza, to travel to Rafah and traveled around in Rafah, and we sought permission, as we have to, by Israel. Israel control everything going in and everyone going into Gaza. And we also coordinated my movements there. Nothing happened to me. Nothing really has happened to our NRC convoys aid operation. But we are largely in the southern third of Gaza, where the majority of the Palestinians are. I think the whole thing shows the horrific killing of seven of our colleagues in the World Central Kitchen that I know well. I saw their good operations. I ate one of their meals when I was in Rafah. It was a very good meal. And the Palestinians, whom they feed millions of meals every day, rely on this. I think what's happened will lead to a reboot of the system for protection for humanitarian work. The US, UK, Germany, and others cannot live with a war machine out of control that is sort of targeting cars without knowing what's inside, as they did in this case and in multiple other cases. So I think there will be a new and better deconfliction or notification system, coordination system, there are many names of it, for them, even in the northern parts of Gaza, where it has been most dangerous.
The World Central Kitchen boat still had 240 tons of food on board the boat. It left Gaza Tuesday. The WCK says they're suspending operations. Other groups say that. What about the Norwegian Refugee Council? And can you talk about this in conjunction with the defunding of UNRWA, the kind of umbrella that facilitates all of this? What this means as the region descends, the strip descends into famine?
Yeah, World Central Kitchen is withdrawing, so are some other groups, which is terrible because they were important for our collective efforts to avoid famine in Gaza. NRC, my own Norwegian Refugee Council, we're not leaving. We are continuing to work today and tomorrow. We have, however, suspended some of our movements, and we're not going north for the time being, because it's considered too difficult, too dangerous. Israel is not allowing conditions for that, and it's in the north, the remaining population there, that is engulfed in the worst famine. UNRWA is the backbone, really, of social services for the Palestinians. It was created by the United States and the other original members of the United Nations when Israel was created, and it led to the Nakba and hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees. UNRWA was created by all of us to take care of the Palestinians that were suffering because of the Holocaust in Europe and the creation of Israel. Since then, UNRWA has become essential in Gaza. They are much bigger than all of the others combined. NRC, the other UN agencies, World Central Kitchen, etc., etc., etc. We're not even half of what UNRWA is. So when the U.S. Congress and the Biden administration says, we're not going to give you money, and so was a number of other donors, because of allegations, no evidence provided, allegations that some of these 13,000 staff, a dozen, dirty dozen, perhaps participating in the horrors of the 7th of October, you can't believe that our very own donors make it difficult for us to help the Palestinian population. UNRWA is essential. UNRWA needs to be funded. Stop the games with politicizing aid to children.
Do you think the U.S. should stop weapons sales and weapons transfers to Israel?
I cannot see any nation giving arms to any war where there are these kind of casualties among children, women, aid workers, journalists, colleagues of you, Amy, are killed en masse in Gaza. No, yeah, of course they shouldn't give arms to that. They could have their fingerprints all over a crime scene.
Jan Egeland, I want to thank you for being with us, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council. Next up, we look at a new Israeli law, which Prime Minister Netanyahu says he will use to ban Al Jazeera. Stay with us. Heaven by Shabaka and the Ancestors. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Press freedom groups are denouncing plans by Israel to ban the award-winning TV network Al Jazeera. On Monday, Israeli lawmakers passed a bill allowing for the temporary banning of foreign broadcasters they deem to be a national security threat. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wrote on social media, quote, Al Jazeera harmed Israel's security, actively participated in the October 7th massacre, and incited against Israeli soldiers. It's time to remove the bullhorn of Hamas from our country, he tweeted. Al Jazeera, which is funded by the Qatari government, is the most widely viewed network in the Arab world, is one of the few outlets to have reporters inside Gaza. Mohammed Mawad, the managing editor for Al Jazeera's Arabic channel, denounced Israel's move to ban the network.
This move, alleging Al Jazeera of siding with the terrorists, is baseless. It's alarming. Our work is we upheld the highest standards of journalistic professionalism. Al Jazeera has been there in Israel and in the Palestinian territories covering the war from both sides. Our work is corroborated and has been corroborated by so many outlets around the world. The fact that we are on the ground, covering from the field, giving voice to the voiceless, bringing this account, which is not available on any other outlet, having correspondents covering from North Gaza, reporting on the starvation there, is very important. And I think the Israeli government is feeling pressure by our coverage. But what we are doing is try to give voice to the voiceless and try and make sure that the suffering of civilians on the ground is heard by the entire world.
That was Mohammed Mawad, the managing editor for Al Jazeera's Arabic channel. For more, we go to London. We're joined by Daniel Levy, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator under Prime Ministers Ehud Barak and Yitzhak Rabin. Thanks so much for joining us again, Daniel. Start off by responding to what this means and what Netanyahu is threatening.
Netanyahu has passed a law. It's now law in Israel that Al Jazeera cannot broadcast. How that is implemented is equipment taken, are people arrested, are vendors who work with Al Jazeera unable to do so. That has not played out yet, Amy. That applies to Israel-occupied East Jerusalem-occupied West Bank. Gaza, which is a war zone, the Al Jazeera work was not in any way dealing with Israeli vendors or the Israeli system, of course. And we're seeing at this stage still Al Jazeera reports coming out of both spaces. But Netanyahu has passed this law. It's important to note that not a single Zionist member of the Knesset voted against the law. If we remember before October 7th, there were these big protests, save Israeli democracy from Netanyahu. Well, none of the opposition parties that are Zionist chose to oppose this law, which the Association for Civil Rights in Israel has called political, not security-related, and a dangerous challenge to freedom of the press and freedom of expression. The two parties representing Palestinian Arab citizens of Israel did vote against in that parliamentary vote.
And Daniel Levy, what evidence is there, if any, that, as the government says, that Al Jazeera actively participated in the October 7th attack?
Well, there is none whatsoever. Israel has not presented any evidence. It hasn't really intended to do so. What's going on here? Prime Minister Netanyahu, in part, is playing to a domestic political audience. He has set Qatar, he has set Al Jazeera up to be a figure of hate. Israelis are not being shown in their own media, a whole different world of problems, the level of censorship and self-censorship inside the Israeli media. So this is red meat to his own base, to the domestic politics, in a situation in which the war is not going particularly well for Israel. He's looking for distractions. I think other things that are going on here is, of course, that he doesn't want these images and this message to come out. We saw that in May 2021, Israel bombed the media tower in Gaza, the Al Jala tower, where Al Jazeera and AP and others had their offices. We remember just under 2 years ago, Shireen Abu Akla was killed by the Israeli forces. We know that approximately 100 journalists, the family of the major Al Jazeera correspondent, Wael Dakhdouch, himself injured, his family killed. So these people have been killed. And I think another piece of this is Netanyahu going not just against Al Jazeera, but trying to push back. And it's part of his effort against Qatar. The Israelis run an aggressive campaign against Qatar in the U.S. and elsewhere. Qatar is mediating these talks. They've met with members of the families of the hostages. They are involved with the head of the CIA and with the head of the Israeli Mossad. But Netanyahu has systematically and frequently tried to undercut and undermine these negotiations. And this is another example of him doing so. And how can he get away with this? It's the same as the story of World Central Kitchen. It's the same as how come this has created the worst hunger crisis anywhere in the world, according to the UN Secretary General. The number of Palestinian civilian deaths, UN workers, aid workers, because he can get away with it, because the United States, his major backer and defender, continues to provide the arms and the weapons, the latest including 2,000-pound bombs.
So your comment on this, do you think the U.S. should cut off the arms flow to Israel? I mean, this is very significant coming from you. You're an advisor to past prime ministers. You're a peace negotiator under two prime ministers of Israel. Do you think the U.S. should cut off the arms flow?
I think it depends, Amy. If the administration wants to continue to see civilian deaths at an astronomical scale, a humanitarian catastrophe unparalleled, more than three times the number of children, according to Save the Children, killed in this conflict in Gaza, as are killed in every conflict around the world in an entire year. If they want to continue to see that level of destruction, if they want to continue to see U.S. complicity in that, the U.S. violating the provisional measures of the International Court of Justice, the U.S. being the prime violator of international law rather than its upholder, then go ahead and continue to provide those offensive, destructive, horrific weapons. If, by contrast, the U.S. wants to be within the law and wants to end this war, and by the way, to successfully advance the negotiations to get a ceasefire and to get the hostages out, if that's the goal of the Biden administration, stop telling me you're heartbroken. Stop telling me this is so sad. We're talking to the Israelis. They should do it differently. Let's work out how to do Rafah. Stop telling me that Netanyahu is a problem. You're the problem, because you're the enabler, you're the facilitator. Every single day that you continue to back this horrendous war, which is tragic for Palestinians, and I would argue doing nothing to advance Israeli security either, in fact, quite the opposite, and which now risks a broader regional escalation and conflagration after the latest provocation in Syria by Israel.
And Daniel Levy, I wanted to ask you about that. We have only about a minute, but the this latest provocation that you talked about, the attack in Syria, do you sense that Netanyahu, given the deep unpopularity that he has and the massive protests against him, is even willing to escalate this conflict more to be able to maintain his power?
It's a crucial question, and I don't see how we can't take that very seriously. We have to take that seriously. He's bombed a diplomatic compound. He's done something which was clearly escalatory and a new level of provocation. Will Iran, Hezbollah maintain the kind of strategic patience that they've shown? Will there be pressure on this? There's clearly not pressure to save Palestinian civilians, but is this where there might be pressure? I think we have to take very seriously that Prime Minister Netanyahu needs this war to continue and is willing and has already gone to extreme lengths to do so. There is a protest movement in Israel, not unfortunately against the war, but to prioritize getting a deal for hostage release. We need everyone to lean into that, which requires real leverage and a real cost for Israel for continuing on this devastating path.
Daniel Levy, we want to thank you for being with us, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator under Prime Ministers Ehud Barak and Yitzhak Rabin. That does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for our digital fellowship. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. I'll also be in Berkeley celebrating KPFA's 75th anniversary, the first Pacifica radio station. That's Saturday night, April 6th. Go to our website at democracynow.org. That's it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
We had food growing up, and we were used to being able to eat. But then all of a sudden, we needed that help. That's why the food bank is here. They're here to help you and
They're here to help you.
The food bank is for anyone who needs one. Visit the food bank near you to help and be helped.
You are tuned in to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, B.C.